Well, here we are. First of 4 hours. We're ready to roll.
Yes, we are.
How you doing, Mr. Christie?
Oh, I am fantastic. How about you? Flight good?
Yeah, you know, it's always better after a win.
This is true. This is true. Food tastes better. But I'll tell you, that is one nice plane.
You like that?
I do, man.
Really?
Jerry, if you're listening, thank you for letting me borrow your seat, my friend.
We've moved up in the world a little bit, haven't we?
Oh, boy, yes, we have. That is beautiful.
That's good stuff, isn't it?
It's awesome, man.
Game last night. Give me your thoughts.
You know what? Great game plan by Terry Stotts. That's what comes to mind initially when I think about it. Kind of what I said in pregame pertaining to C.J. McCollum, I would have liked to see, you know what he can do. Take the ball out of his hands and make other people beat you. And I thought that's what Terry's idea was. Even though DeMarcus still ended up with 28 points, but it took he took 19 shots. Not terrible, but needed somebody else. You had Temple with 14, Matt Barnes with 13. But it was the ability to make shots. Kings 32% from the three-point line. The last four games or five games, they've been shooting 40, so that went down. And then you look at the Trailblazers, 48% from the three-point line. So they had a lot of people. CJ gets his 20, and then you got one, two, three, four, five guys that chip in with double figures. So a good game plan. And in this game last night, Kings didn't make shots. The bench just didn't produce like it had been in the other five games.
You know, I have not asked you this question before. The word analytics is prevalent now in society, not just sports, but in society in general.
Yeah.
How do you feel about analytics as it relates to professional basketball?
You know, when I think about it, Grant, the numbers mean something. But when it becomes an absolute, in like Houston, for instance, when they in essence, they tried to take the mid-range game out of the game of basketball, meaning that it would just be three-point shots or layups. And numbers don't equate to that. There's a gray area. So I agree with some of it because, as you see, I write down a lot of numbers, and I allow them to talk to me and tell me different things about what's going on in the game and trends of players, trends of teams, where they stack, because they do mean something. But relying solely upon them is not something – I don't agree with that part of it. I say you allow it to be a part of your game plan. You allow it to speak to the player, meaning if you're a coach and you want to sit down and you want to say, look at this. You're looking at you take C.J. McCollum, for instance. From the left side, he's shooting 5 percentage points better from the three-point line than he is from the right side.
Right.
So what that tells me, Grant, is I want to keep him away from that spot. So it does help, but solely rely upon it, no.
Okay, the reason why I'm asking you this question is Jerry and I doing the game on the 26th against Philadelphia, right?
Right.
And I made a comment in the middle of the telecast, and I said, Jerry, you know, in a league that's guard-oriented, mm-hmm. here's another big in Joel Embiid that looks like he, if he stays healthy, is going to be a tremendous player. And I said, isn't it interesting that in a league that is basically a guard-oriented league, now there are exceptions, Cleveland with LeBron, but LeBron, for all intents and purposes, is their point guard. But my point is, by position, if you vote for him, you're not voting for him as a postseason award as a guard. You're voting for him as a forward. But anyway, I don't want to get off on a tangent. And I said, you know, you got Anthony Davis. You've got Karl Anthony Towns. I go, you got DeMarcus, you know. And I said, and he says, yeah, you're right. He said, but you know what? He goes, the one thing that's missing from all of those players, they don't win. And now, obviously, Joel Embiid's just a rookie. And Karl Anthony Towns is only in his second year. And so I didn't want to get carried away, but it made me think. So anyway, this morning I read a very interesting Q&A. If you would give me a minute, I want to share this with you because it embellishes, or not embellishes, it reinforces what I've been saying about the way the game is played now. It was a conversation with Dan D'Antoni, Mike D'Antoni's brother, and the question he was asked was, you guys take a lot of threes. Did you feel like there maybe wasn't quite enough working the ball into the paint early on? Response, you're old school, aren't you? Do you watch the NBA ever? The response was, yeah. He goes, you see those top three teams? Golden State? Do they work it in? My brother in Houston, the biggest turnaround in the league. Do they work it in? You can go to any computer and run what the best shots are, and I will tell you the post-up is the worst shot in basketball. If you want to run down and try to get it in there to shoot over somebody, then you're beating analytics. The best shot in basketball is that corner three. The next best shot in basketball is any other three. Other than free throws, which we try to do, when you get to the foul line, you score 1.5 points every time you go to the foul line in the pros. It just trickles down. It's the same thing for college kids. Question, Danny, were you sort of able to lull them in, Hey, I haven't finished my damn analytics story yet. You have to go to bet or something because you've worn out? If you can get to the layup and it's clean, it's not one that's highly contested. It's 1.8 points per attempt. It's 1.3 from that corner, 1.27. Do you know what a post-up is with a guy standing over the top of you? It's 0.78. So you run your team down there, and we'll see how long you can stay with teams that can play the other way. You've seen it in the NBA. The last two championships have been Cleveland and Golden State. What do? You don't see anybody post up. They just spread that thing out and go. I changed a long time ago. I coached for 15 years like a dummy, running down there real hard so I can get it in there for the worst shot in basketball. I don't even know what I was doing. The short version of my answer is no. And I've been talking about this for the last few years, and Jerry and I talk about it on TV, and you and I have discussed this. I am not crazy about analytics, but I will say this. I go by the eyeball test. And the way the NBA game is played today, I don't care who your center is. I don't care if you can reincarnate Shaquille O'Neal into a 25-year-old kid. I don't care. If you do not make threes and you do not have a prolific shooting team in this day and age of the NBA, you will not win, period. I really believe that.
I can't necessarily, especially when you hear the numbers, you can't necessarily argue. My thing is, if you have a big guy who is skilled, you have an advantage because you can't teach size. You can teach skill. And that is, so I'm not saying, and I absolutely actually hate when the Kings go down and just vanilla butter knife, try to throw it in and say, DeMarcus, beat him. I think it has to happen through movement. And then once that movement takes place, Grant, like he was saying, if you can get a clean look at a layup, that is fantastic. That's more along the lines of even when I go back to our Kings teams, that's what we would do. Pass it in, cut off of him, try to even help Vlade or C. Webb by cutting hard, making his guy have to just step a little bit so then they could take up the space. And now that shot becomes a higher percentage shot, the little hook shot for them or whatever it is. Looking for layups, looking for wide open jumpers. When you talk about the corner three, and it totally makes sense. I'm just not going to live off of them because then you get a guy like, it's only one guy, but you look at a guy like DeMar DeRozan who doesn't live off the three, but he's still averaging a really high amount of points, and their team wins as well. But they do shoot the three well. In this day and age, if you don't shoot the three, you won't win. I will attest to that.
Yep. And so I was thinking about the Kings' four-game winning streak, and we talked about how good Ty Lawson was.
Yes.
And then I thought about it for a moment. I go, you know, the Kings wouldn't have won any of those games if DeMarcus Cousins had not made a three at the end of the game. Okay, and I'm thinking to myself, here's the Kings' best big man.
Yep.
And yet they won four games in a row because of the way the bench played, and they won four games in a row because DeMarcus hit a big three in the final minute of those games. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, the game is so different now. I mean, did you see Joel Embiid shoot the three the other night?
Goodness.
Now, can you imagine when Shaquille O'Neal was coming out of LSU, when he was with the Orlando Magic? Can you imagine if they said, you know, Shaq, we really want you to, you know, extend your game, and we want you to start playing, you know, outside the paint and on the wing, and feel free to shoot threes. Can you imagine if Akeem Olajuwon or Patrick Ewing, it was never even brought up. It was like the only time you ever shot a three is if you ended up with the ball and there was 1 second on the clock, okay, and it was a freaky deal. The game has changed so much now. You know, when I talk about Anthony Davis and I talk about Karl Anthony Towns and I talk about DeMarcus and I talk about what I think is going to be a great Joel Embiid. All right, now I'm going to give you two other centers that I think are very, very good. DeAndre Jordan and Rudy Gobert.
Yep.
What do they do?
Defense. What?
That's right. They are goalies.
Yep.
They're not really the first scoring option or the second scoring option or the third, but they're all but they're averaging over 10 points a game.
Yeah.
But they're also averaging 13 and 14 rebounds a game because for the most part they're staying around the basket.
Yep.
And they alter the game defensively.
Right.
And so my question is, and because we talk all of this about DeMarcus Cousins, I think he's the most skilled big man in the game. Like, sure. I don't think Anthony Davis, I don't think, you know, again, I think he's got everything. But I go back to the question that we keep on posing just to have fun. Can you be a 50-win-plus team, which to me, when you get to 50, you're an elite team.
Right.
That's my version. That's my definition. Other people may disagree, but I think if you win 50 and more,
yes,
you're an elite team.
Oh, yeah.
Can you become an elite team in the NBA if your best player is the five man? And if the answer to that question is yes, does that mean that your five man can't play like a five man?
Yes, he can't play like a five man. He has to play like DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, those type of players. And if he is your best player, you're going to have to put pieces around him. That's why it's so important that the Kings get three-point shooting, because he draws, and this equates to the win streak. He draws double teams, Grant, in an unconventional way. He does it on the block as well, but when he drives and puts the ball down and he's spinning, they're coming at him, and now he's finding Anthony Tolliver. He's finding a Temple in the corner, and those guys are knocking him down. You're going to have to surround him with guys who can shoot the ball at a really, really high clip. So I think the answer is yes, you can win, but you're going to have people around him who can absolutely shoot the ball. Another guy,
yes.
Mark Gasol, he's added that three-point shot to his repertoire as well, and he shoots it effortlessly. And we're going to see him next game.
Don't you think it's an interesting conversation because of how different the game is? Even when you played, which is not that long ago, you know, the game is so different. Think about the rivalries with the Lakers. Shaq never left anywhere. He never went 15 feet away from the basket, did he?
You know, unless, and this is to your point, unless, Grant, you are going to be a Gobert, a DeAndre Jordan, who catches alley-oops, puts them in, and is just defensive-minded, coming in like a big guy, like a Shaq, it would be really hard to play in the NBA now. Because, yeah, on the offensive end, you could go get two, you could bully ball it, you could get 30. You better have some people who can shoot around you. But defensively, think about that. You're going to pull them away. One of Shaq's biggest things was, you know, we always tried to put him in the pick and roll. But now you would have to go out and stick a DeMarcus Cousins. You would have to go out and stick a – and that's the only place that they are – because you don't have an advantage on the inside against Shaq. Forget that. You can cancel that. Just write it off. But on the outside, making him move his feet and those type of things, you could get him in foul trouble that way. It's going to be hard. That's why most bigs and most – you see them coming in now. They all are able to shoot the three.
All right. If you want to talk about that, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. And so to me, maybe the bigger question is, if you have a player like DeMarcus or Karl Anthony Towns or Joel Embiid or whatever, that absolutely positively, when they are playing with their back to the basket from 18 feet in, you must double team them.
Yes.
And if they're good passers, and DeMarcus is a good passer, if you don't have good, consistent three-point shooters, then you're not going to win in this league. You're just not.
Yes.
You're not going to win if DeMarcus is passing the ball out of double teams and you don't have very good three-point shooters. And let's just call it the way it is. Darren Collison and Ty Lawson are not good three-point shooters. Aaron Aflalo and Ben McLemore are not good three-point shooters. And so I'm looking at the Achilles heel of this Sacramento Kings team, and the reality is they need more and better shooters, period.
Yes, more and better shooters. And another thing that you need, Grant, is you need a high IQ player, because it's not just going to be threes. You are going to have to get layups, but guys have to understand and know how to cut. And a lot of times I see cutting, but not with purpose. I see opportunities that are wasted because as you throw it, you don't throw it and let the defense get set. As you're throwing it, you're cutting at the same time. It requires a response out of the defense, and that would free up DeMarcus to do more, and guys would get layups. And when you start getting layups, that changes the game, because as much as we're talking about three-point shooting, when you watch Golden State, they get quite a bit. They get quite a few layups, and that then draws the play, the defense in a little bit, which then helps their three-point game.
All right. If you want to comment on that, I'd love to hear from you at 339-1140. That's 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Back to the game last night. To me, that's just another opportunity lost. You and I talked about this on the radio. Mm-hmm. I thought we would get the A version of the Blazers, whatever that would be without Damian Lillard, okay? I thought we would get a concerted effort by Portland. I thought that they would be extremely focused with the fact that they're at San Antonio tomorrow, then they're at Minnesota, then they're at Golden State. That was a huge game. Did Portland deserve to win the game? Absolutely. But the Kings, and you talked about this, the Kings missed an inordinate amount of open shots last night.
Yeah, and to our point that we were just talking about, that is where if you're going to compete, because teams are going to start to lock in. It's a copycat league from the standpoint that once people start seeing how to guard DeMarcus and they're searching, now it's, hey, we know what he can do. Instead of allowing him to get 40 or 50, let him get – he's going to get about 28 to 30, and that's what he got last night. 19 shots, 28 points, but if – no one else is going to step up, you're going to get beat. This is a team in Portland that allows 28th in the league at 112 points a game. That's how much they give up on a night-to-night basis, and the Kings were only able to put up 89 points.
All right, if you want to comment on that, 339-1140, 800-920-1140. And again, if you're not really into analytics, that's fine. You know, I'm not crazy about it. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know what? I think it's a tool, all right? I think it's a tool to help you. Somebody also said, I forgot about Hassan Whiteside. It's a great point. Miami doesn't win with Hassan Whiteside.
Yeah.
I mean, I really question right now, if you were going to start building a team from scratch, would the center position be the last position that you would be concerned with?
It depends on how skilled they are. But I'm just thinking about this, Grant. When you run offense, when you throw it into the post that way, it allows the defense to get set. They get a look at you. Yes, you are closer to the basket, but it's been done that way for so long. There are defenses set to figure that out. Now, when you spread the court out and guys are moving and you have guys who are willing passers and good cutters and know how to set picks, it changes the entire game up. And that is a benefit to teams who play like that. That's why it was a benefit to us. And we weren't even shooting three-pointers at that type of clip. We were looking for layups and just open shots. But now you're seeing a team like Golden State who, as soon as they cross over half court, the offense starts. It's not down at the three-point line, looking to pound it in. Defense gets set. You get on the proverbial nail at the free throw line, set up an eye on the weak side, and all these different things. It changes the game because you can't get set.
All right, 339-1140 is the local number. Again, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. The Kings' next play on Saturday as they have a rematch with the Memphis Grizzlies. And we'll see. You know, again, then you're at Denver, and that's a team that you're fighting for with the last playoff spot. Let's get to Tyler. We'll get to you, Tyler. You're on with Grant Napier and Doug Christie.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's happening?
I just wanted to talk about the game last night. So I was listening to pregame, and one thing that I noticed in the last four games, and including the game last night, is the Kings just don't seem to come out at the start of games very strong, and they seem to, like, get caught behind, go down 10 points, and they seem to be fighting back. And it's really tough when you go down so early to, like, scrap your way back into a game, and they seem to not have enough time sometimes. They've gotten lucky the last four games, but it's tough because last night was the same deal.
You know, Tyler, actually, your point is well taken, and you listen to Garrett Temple after the game, you listen to DeMarcus Cousins, the word soft and not focused. There was a couple of them that the words that they used talking about them, instead of coming out and punching first and being ready. And that is just – it's a mindset, and it takes, obviously, the coaching staff, but I'm sure that Coach Yeager has got them ready to go. But I notice a lot of times at halftime – they come in, and then in the second half, they come out and they play better. What that says to me, at least, is that on the fly, they're not adjusting. And you really have to come out when you set yourself up for games like this. Grant and I have talked about it. This is a game. It's important. It means something. This hasn't happened here for a long time. Now you have to start making sure you come out and you are physical. You are getting after these people. And you're right. It doesn't happen. They get down 10, and then we talk about at the end of the game, oh, it was almost there. It was close. Unacceptable.
Right. And the issue is, like, the reason it gets close towards the end of games, because it's not till the second half that they actually start figuring out that they need to come out that way. And if they do that at the beginning of games, it'd be different. I just had two more things to say.
Yeah.
What's interesting is when DeMarcus Cousins does get in the post, in the low post area, and they throw the ball to him, it seems as if the ball movement just stops, and like the players just, like, I don't know, they look to just have DeMarcus Cousins just go to work when they should be doing is cutting, moving around, trying to get an open shot, because Cousins is going to get a double team every time he gets it.
Agreed with you from the standpoint that a lot of times, and it's not that DeMarcus is a black hole, Grant, because
he's not.
Yeah, he will move the ball, but if you just stop, it is so much of a benefit, Tyler, to the defense. I can't even tell you. Guys have to cut, move, weak side everywhere. Just keep moving. He'll find you, and it helps him as well.
Right. One more thing, Grant, I wanted to ask you. I'm sure you can talk about this for hours, but what do you think of what George Karl has come out with his book?
I think it's disgraceful, and I was going to talk more about this a little bit later in the show, but I think George Karl is going to completely tarnish his career. I think that he is going to be looked upon by the NBA community as a joke and as a bitter old man, even though he's not old, but I'm using that as just a figure of speech. And
right.
I think that George Karl is going to end up regretting writing this book, because it's going to, in my opinion, tarnish everything that he's accomplished. And I mean everything that he's accomplished in the world of basketball. I think it will prohibit him from going into the Hall of Fame. And I think George Karl is going to be a lonely man at the latter stages of his life. And I think that's too bad, but he has no one to blame but himself.
Yeah, especially with what he come out and said about Damian Lillard.
It's a disgrace.
Too far.
And he's never coached Damian
Lillard, and Damian Lillard has been playing. He plays hard every time he gets out on the floor, and he's had a pretty good career.
And let me ask you this. Is there a better indictment of what George Karl is doing than a guy like Terry Stotts?
Yep.
The only reason why Terry Stotts is a coach in the NBA is because of George Karl.
Yes,
and Terry Stotts said that. And then he ripped George a new one.
Oh, boy, did he. That was so well put.
It was eloquent.
Very.
It was concise.
Yes.
It was spot on.
Man. Which he should have, because that's attacking his team. That's his franchise right there. Franchise player Damian Lillard, and he's going right after him. That's not good for the team.
Appreciate it. George Karl is – it's sad.
Very much so. That
and I'm going to say something without knowing, okay? I'm just raising it. This is so odd to me. This is so why I keep on asking myself. I hope George does not have a health issue that is making his thought process irrational. Does that make sense?
You mean terminal, so maybe he's like, you know what, I'm just going to go for
it, or
something like that?
Or, you know, early stages of dementia. Or I mean, again, this is so odd to me that a guy like this, with his type of career, here's the other deal. Where's somebody that is in George's camp
saying,
George, hey, this is not a good idea? Or is George's ego, which we know is so big, that he's not listening to anybody? This is so odd to me. Why would George do this, Doug? I guess that's the question. What is it that George is trying to accomplish by putting out a book like this?
Well, when you look at it, the one thing that, and we you and I have talked about this, because we talked about it for a few days, the one thing that comes to mind is money. That's the one thing. But then you think about it, he's had a really long career. He's still getting paid from the Kings. So that kind of...
And he's not going to make that much money from one book.
Exactly. So that kind of goes to the wayside. Then it just says, you know, is he bitter?
You know what I think? I think a lot of people now will not go out and buy the book. That's what I think. I think a lot of people are so turned off that they're going to say, you know what? I have no desire to read that book.
Well, the Lillard comment absolutely, and I think we're
nobody in Portland's buying the book.
Oh, you can guarantee that. It's 3:26, time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737.
All right, we'll take the break. We'll come right back here on Sports 1140. Back with you here, Grant Napier, Doug Christie. We're going to talk Raiders football in just a moment. Greg Papa, the voice of the Raiders, will join us. And, of course, to say the least, they got a rather big game coming up this weekend in Denver. And we've talked so much about Matt McGloin. He doesn't have to play great this week. He does not have to play great. He has to play well, and he cannot play poorly. All right? If he plays poorly, then I don't see the Raiders winning a game in the postseason if he does not play well this week.
And you just said RIP Raiders. That's what just happened, Grant.
Well, that's exactly right. If Matt McGloin does not have to play great this week. Again, he doesn't. He just has to play well. But if he plays poorly and they're the reason why they lose, that's scary moving forward.
I agree. I mean, if they can run the football, that will help him so much.
But I think they're going to beat Denver. I think they will win this week.
Really? I'll be interested.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's go to Greg Papa, who's now on with us, the voice of the Raiders, our Raiders insider. Greg, happy new year. Hope you're doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm optimistic to hear what you got to say about how the Raiders are going to beat Denver, because that's a challenge, even for Derek Carr to go in there to Sports Authority Field. Last time we played him, Aqib Talib did not play, and they're going to be completely healthy. They did put DeMarcus Ware on IR, but they got a lot of pass rushers. So even with Derek, I think this was going to be a challenge on New Year's Day.
Yeah, I just haven't been impressed with Denver the last couple of weeks. And then I'll ask you, because you're a lot closer to all of this than I am when it comes to the NFL. Talk to me about a team that just won a Super Bowl a year ago, and now they're playing in a game in which they know that's their last game of the year, and they're going home. I mean, which team shows up for the Denver Broncos on Sunday?
Oh, I think the hatred for the Raiders runs deep in Dove Valley in Denver, and they're going to do their best to stick it to the Raiders to knock them out or knock them down. I mean, the Raiders' fate is so dramatically up in the air on what happens on Sunday. They could wind up the number one seed if the Raiders beat Denver and New England loses to Miami, we're the number one seed, and everything goes through Oakland. You could drop all the way to five, the way this playoff structure works in the NFL. So it's a huge swing. This is a hugely important game. I understand what you're saying about Denver. They have flaws. The quarterback, I thought, was really playing well early in the year, Trevor Siemian. And then he hurt his shoulder, and he just seemed to be apprehensive. And he was very tentative, played very poorly against the Raiders on that Sunday night game, which kind of really tipped Denver down. They weren't quite the same team after that. They had that home loss to Kansas City. The overtime game, which I think really crushed their season. So they've got flaws. They're not a perfect team. But they had flaws last year, and they rode that defense. The defense is still something to deal with. I think that their running game and their offensive line has been a problem. The quarterback play has not been good. But they do have capable wide receivers, and it's always a challenge to go in there and play. And I think just the magnitude of this game, every single game the Raiders play. This game Sunday is going to feel like a playoff game, because if you win, you bypass the whole wild card round. You go right to the divisional round in mid-January, and you're a home team versus losing this game. And if San Diego doesn't beat Kansas City, then the Raiders drop to 5, and you have to go on the road, maybe to Houston, for a playoff game. So it's a huge swing game. Obviously, the Raiders are going to be highly motivated to play. But I think, you know, not having Derek, you lose some of your offensive balance. I think the strength of this team offensively going into the game on Christmas Eve against the Colts was they were equally lethal running the ball some weeks and passing the ball. They were number 6 in rushing and passing. So the opponents really could not hunker down on one area. The Raiders were completely balanced. Now You still got the wide receivers. You still got Amari and Crabtree and Seth Roberts and the tight ends and the young backs and Latavius. But they're going to be loading up to stop the run and make Matt McGloin stick some throws on them. And they have a great, great pass defense. They are the no-fly zone. Don't forget.
So when you talk about Pop, looking at McGloin having to pass the ball, do you see and have you saw from him the ability to pass the ball proficiently enough for them to go into a Denver and get a game or win on the road?
Yeah, he's going to make plays. I mean, Matt McGloin is a capable player. Go back to his rookie year, 2013. He made six starts. His very first game starting in the road in the NFL period was on the road in Houston. He threw three touchdown passes. He's very capable. What I think hurts him is his lack of size, and I just worry about mistakes being made. It's tough being the backup quarterback for an entire year. Once you break training camp, you're getting some reps, but you're getting like one out of four series. The starting quarterback is getting most of them, and he's getting most of them with the number one people. So they're obviously getting him up to speed. He's capable, though. You know, his first throw on Christmas Eve, he hit his back foot, and the Coliseum turf gave way, and he started to slip, but he stepped up, and he made a tough throw on an outcut to Andre Holmes for a first down. He missed a throw later on a third down to Andre, threw it to the wrong spot and threw it inside. And then he made a terrific throw to Amari Cooper. And what I liked about that, Dougie, was Amari just went up in the air and took that ball away from Vontae Davis and Mike Adams. So I think the people around him, the wide receivers, have got to play bigger. Amari has really had a poor last quarter of the year. And yeah, I think a lot of it's been that shoulder. The right shoulder has been bothering him. He's got to rise above it. He's got to play big now and help this guy out. But likewise for Crabtree. And I think really it's on the offensive line to be the dominant run-blocking, pass-blocking line. He got three guys going to the Pro Bowl. So he is more than capable. He's going to make a splash play. What you worry about is him making mistakes, kind of like when Derek was young, you know, turned the ball over. I worry about him getting hurt. A lot of it is the quarterback's in charge of the pass protection. He's got to be in tune with this offensive line, especially going on the road, Denver, all their pass rushers and Von Miller and Shane Ray and all of them. So you've got to be on point. So, yes, he will make plays, but he will make some mistakes because he's only got six starts in the NFL.
Right. And that's the unknown in terms of the, you know, when he makes those mistakes, you know, to what magnitude. I was just wondering, you know, here we are, we've waited so long for this, and it's been a great year, and the Raiders are in the playoffs. As you said, they could be a one seed, they could be a two seed, they could be a five seed. If the narrative is that Matt McGloin just does not play well at all on Sunday, is that doom and gloom as we look at the playoffs? I mean, how important is it to you? I mean, seriously, in terms of winning anything in the playoffs, that I don't think he has to play great on Sunday, but how important is it that he just plays well?
Well, he's got to, you know, I kind of go back to Jim Plunkett's very first start as a Raider. And I wasn't around the team then, but Al Davis told me this story, and I heard it from Jim Plunkett. Mainly I heard it from Al. And Al, what he told him was, Jim, it's not important that you play well tomorrow. It's important that the Raiders win. Mm. So there's, I mean, but I think in the way the modern NFL game is now, the quarterback does a lot more than just the obvious throws. He's got to manage the game. One thing that Derek was really good at, and you could see it in the game against the Colts, probably more than any other I can recall, was he made significant contributions to the running game. His audibles at the line in that game, there were several, three plays in a row I can remember when DeAndre Washington popped those back-to-back 22-yard touchdown runs in the third quarter. That was all Derek. He saw their front. He checked, he flipped the run from a run right to a run left and vice versa, did it three times.
Yeah.
And I think Grant, Matt can do that. Matt's a smart guy. Matt's a gamer. He's a feisty guy. This is the guy that went to Happy Valley when things weren't so happy, you know, after the Jerry Sandusky, yeah, Joe Paterno mess. And that was just complete swirling controversy there. And he was not, he didn't have a scholarship. He was a walk-on, and Bill O'Brien took a liking to the guy, and he went 8-4. As a starter there. So Matt's a Pennsylvania tough guy. He's going to snarl at you and fight. He's smart. He knows the system. He'll be fine. His lack of size, I think, is the biggest thing that concerns me. And not that, like, you know, Derek was not, you know, a towering quarterback, but Derek, you know, has a little more size on him at 6'3", and 6'1" is a big difference in the NFL. Just seeing things, being able to fit throws around him. You know, one thing I think it'll help, and you don't want Derek Carr to get hurt, don't get me wrong, but the running game was still compromised because Derek could not get under center. He did it a little bit in the Indy game on Christmas Eve. The first play was under center. He had a couple, and then he had a couple, or two of the first four plays were under center. Then later on the goal line, he went under center. But it was more just to show it. They didn't do it a lot. It was more gun runs and pistol runs. It really compromises the running game. In particular, Murray, Latavius Murray, likes to be an eye back. So one byproduct of this is I think the Raider running game will be more forceful with the quarterback under center when they want to put him under center, not being limited.
Yeah.
But conversely, they're going to load the box. I mean, if you're going against the Raiders now in that running game, minus Derek Carr, Amari Cooper, and Michael Crabtree don't scare you quite as much. The offensive line of the running game does. So you're going to see a lot of 8- and 9-man boxes now.
And the good news is weather looks like it's going to be pretty good on Sunday. Hey, I want to switch gears real quick because I'm bewildered like a lot of people are with this book coming out by George Carlin. I was up in Portland last night, and I was talking with Kevin Calabro about this, and I know you've spent a lot of time around George. What's your reaction to this?
You know, I've only read excerpts of it, so I really can't tell you exactly what's in the book. I read the line about Carmelo Anthony and about DeMarcus. I love George Carl. I was around him when he was a young man. He was ostracized, I think, out of the NBA. You know, there was a lot of whispers that he had a drinking problem. I was actually out with him the night before he got fired. The owner of the Warriors called me at home and said, you know, were you with George last night? And George was young. He was kind of a big frat kid. You know, he's the kind of guy that'd stack all the beer bottles on the plane and watch them all fall and laugh. You know, he was like that. But he was coaching in the NBA in his early to mid-30s, a tremendous, tremendous basketball coach. He had a real handle on both offense and defense. He did not compromise one side or the other. He was a tough guy, though. He challenged people. He got ostracized. He got sent to Spain and the CBA for years before he could come back in Seattle and had a good run with the Sonics. So I don't know what's exactly in the book, but I know what's in George's heart has always been, you know, kindness. He is who he is. He's not for everybody. I remember him, you know, one time jumping on the Warrior owner's desk and kicking stuff off. He was nuts. He was a big kid. He was a little bit crazy. You know, I could tell you so many stories about George, but I love George. He taught me so much about the game. He wasn't for everybody. I think a lot of people were turned off by him when he was young. It was hard to see him later in his life, you know, when the throat cancer got to him. I did a long interview with him when he was coach of the Nuggets right before they traded Melo. And, you know, he was very honest about, you know, how he dealt with cancer and just a little bit too much honesty for a lot of people in the field. So it was sad for me to watch him with you guys in Sacramento. I think he'd kind of lost his power then. He wasn't up off the bench as much as he was. So it's hard for me to comment directly on the book, Grant, because I haven't seen it. I hope to read it and do more on it later. But I will just tell you, I love George Carl.
Thanks, Greg. Have a safe trip to Denver, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Greg.
Thank you, Pop.
Appreciate it. You know, listen, you know, he hasn't read the book, so he didn't want to comment on this stuff. But I said this again. What did I say to you 15, 20 minutes ago? I'm really hoping that George, this is not health-related, like that he's lost his mind. Because to me, the Damian Lillard stuff,
that
comes
kinda
to cross to me as a guy that's losing his mind.
Yes.
Like we're a guy that's not thinking right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you don't speak. I mean, the father thing threw me for a loop. Well, that was just like you crossed the line that you can't cross.
Absolutely.
But now to speak on someone else's player and then to watch Terry Stotts's, you know, because most people would think, Grant, he's speaking on Terry Stotts' player, and Terry Stotts used to be his guy, so maybe Terry Stotts said this to him, and that's how he got that information. And
good
that
point.
Was absolutely squashed immediately.
Yeah.
And so that's just – you. Those are things you don't do. That has nothing to do with you. You don't know what goes on over there, so why are you speaking on it? And then the fact that you are and then you get called out on it leads just a bad, bad look.
He made George look really bad. First of all, let me back that up. I apologize. George made George look really bad. But Terry Stotts, a guy that, you know, is probably the most loyal you could be to a George Carl, just absolutely killed George. And you know what? George deserved it because George Karl is losing his freaking marbles. I don't know how any – I have no other explanation. We'll come back and talk more about it right here on Sports 1140. All right, Grant Napier and Doug Christie, 339-1140 and 800-920-1140. Let's get to Sal. Hello, Sal.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. It's been a little bit since I've talked to you, Mr. Napier, and it's so nice to hear Doug Christie on the – on the airways. I just remember watching you so many times and really going through coaching and through emulating, saying, you know, if you watch Bobby Jackson, you watch Mr. Christie, you watch that bench mob, and if you go through life that way, you will stand out and you will make a difference and be significant. I just really appreciate hearing you guys.
Thank you.
You guys are doing a great job. 2 points. On the mid-range and analytics, there's something to be said about numbers in basketball, but then there's something to be said about the mid-range, and I kind of understand possessions and end of clock time and all that, but doesn't it kind of make sense that a mid-range is a higher percentage shot than, say, a long three? I know the game has changed so much.
It's not about what's a higher percentage.
Yeah, you get an extra point.
Right,
more
exactly.
Points. Okay, okay.
So it's done. It's done that way, and you make a. I understand where you're coming from, and I completely understand your line of thinking, but the analytics say no. It's better to shoot threes.
Yeah, the closer you get to the basket, it would seem that would go up. But
right.
When you add that extra point in there, it changes things.
What if we talked about instead of because everything has become offense in every sport, it seems like offensive football, offense. What if it was a little bit more like 1984, where defense was stressed, and it just seems like there's a lot of ticky-tacky, touchy fouls, that things that the bench mob used to do, or that I don't think that they could do right now.
It's but you know what? You bring up an interesting. But it's not. It's 2016, and
yes.
You know, and I'm guilty of this too. I have to forget about the way the game used to be played, and I have to forget about what I watch with Doug and Chris and Vladdy and Peja, because the reality is, as great as they were, okay, the game is so different that I don't know how many games you would win. You guys had great players, but the game is so different. Chris Webber would have to be a three-point shooter now, in addition to everything else.
Yes.
And Chris
true.
Really was more of a mid-range guy. Chris was, you know, 20 feet in. He wasn't 23 feet.
You would have to play.
He also passed, too. I mean, I think that was one of the greatest things about the Kings was that in that era was the passing. You didn't know everybody could score. That was a beautiful thing. Anyways,
correct.
We could talk about that forever. My next point was, and with all due respect to people as they get older, and I work in the medical field, and I just wonder if anybody's even kind of entertained the idea of Mr. George Karl, who I respected as a coach all the way up until Sacramento, until he just rolled the ball out there and there was no game plan, it seems, especially defense. I just wonder, has anybody suggested some type of specs, like a brain scan?
Well, you know, we can't get into that. That's, you know, I mean, come on. All right, let's get to Rick. Hello, Rick.
Hey, Grant, it's an honor to talk to you.
Thanks for calling, Rick.
You know, I was just listening to you on the George Karl book. You know, I'm just a common man, nothing exceptional about me. But
That would be me, too. Go ahead.
When I was younger, there was a coach by the name of George Allen. Do you remember
Yeah, of
him?
Course. Oh, absolutely. Who could not remember George Allen?
And as a young man, he came on the television, and he said that... you know what? You can be anything you want to be. You have to work for it, though, and you have to be able to dream. And as a young man, I went and bought his book because he was promoting a book called The Future Is Now. I still remember it.
Right.
I graduated from college and had a good career in the military. But in those darkest moments that I had, the inspiration that he gave and the ability to motivate people, it still was in, I remember that, and I put it in my mind. And so, to me, inspiration is a great thing by these coaches. And then I look at George Karl, and I think to myself, what is the takeaway from his book? Do I feel inspired? is it motivating? Is it, and, you know, I hear it's nothing like but gossip. So I'm not going to buy his book. And really, that's all I really wanted to say.
Happy New Year to you, and thank you very much for calling
the show. Arnold, you're on with Grant and Doug.
Hey, guys. Good afternoon. Hey. So, you know, I wanted to kind of piggyback on the last caller, the one before that. Just kind of the style of play has changed. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was like in the mid-2000s, the NBA started implementing the new rule, kind of a hand-check rule. Is that correct? Somewhere around there?
Yeah.
It was a big change.
Yep,
and,
every year.
You know, the thing is, personally, I understand they were trying to make the game more, you know, off its higher points because of that. Or maybe there's other reasons, but I think that was the main agenda. But from my point of view, it just seems like there's a lot more free throws. And I know it seems like there's more points, but it seems like there's more free throws and the game slowed down because there's more calls. I think that's really affected the game, from a, this is from my standpoint at least. And, you know, I personally believe that that rule really hurt teams with no superstars or maybe didn't have the same caliber of players as other teams because I felt defense is something that you can play consistently, and maybe a small market team can't attract the big names, offensive names, can at least have the fundamental of being able to play hard-nosed ball and, you know, not have to just try to go offensive the entire time. So that's just my point of view. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but, you know, as you see more free throws, more foul calls.
You know,
and you think that the tempo is not, to me, it's not flowing throughout the entire game. In spurts, it may, but it's just not flowing. So,
you know, I
love watching good defense. It's exciting, fast breaks. So anything like that would be awesome. Anyway, that's a good one.
Thank you.
You know, Arnold, to his point, interesting. They started changing the rules, and the rules were, in my opinion, put in place because the skill level had dropped a little bit and they wanted to bring scoring back up. So now hand checking, therefore free throws, it's opened up the game quite a bit. So when you talk about analytics, Grant, but then we compare Hakeem Olajuwon and Shaq and all those guys, the rules were different. When they played, you could, when Patrick was playing, you had Derek Harper who just had a lock on your hip and he's bringing.
Here's the other big deal. Mm-hmm. You could not double team a player without the ball.
Huh?
That was for big men, that was the biggest difference. So Shaq, you
zoning
could not
up.
Double team him
exactly.
If he didn't have the ball. Now you can have three guys around a guy if he doesn't have the ball.
Well, that's scary. It's 3:56, time for a retirement checkup. Call David Hedger at Granite Bay Asset Management Group, 791-1737.
All right, the one and only Jerry Reynolds, when we come back right here on Sports 1140 KHTK.